is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at worldwrestlingresource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. And welcome to another edition of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. Jason Briney with you. The World Cup coming to Iowa City, April 7th and 8th, 2018. Today, our guest on the program to talk about the World Cup and his background as a head coach is the U.S. National Freestyle Coach Bill Zadek, a former Iowa Hawkeye. He was a national champion under Coach Gable, two-time All-American. And Bill, we worked together for a couple years at USA Wrestling, and officially welcome to the program. Yes. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
And Bill and I have one thing in common. The only thing we have in common other than working at USA Wrestling is at one time we were both the low men on the totem pole. We were both coordinators at USA Wrestling. He goes director, manager, coordinator, and it was Ryan Johnson, Bill Zadek, and myself were the only three people that held the title of coordinator. So, how you've moved up the ladder.
I guess I just dug in and wouldn't take no for an answer.
They couldn't, they couldn't get rid of you. As we were talking before the show, you're engaged and you're going to get married in June, and you were talking about Sam, who your fiance who comes from a wrestling family. You couldn't get rid of her either. You couldn't scare her away. So, you're tied to it. You're a lifer.
Yes, I am. And she is too. So we're both looking forward to that part of life. So exciting things coming up this summer.
Let's just go back to last summer real quick, because, there's still a buzz in this country about freestyle wrestling and maybe the biggest it's been since maybe 95, 96 with the Olympics in Atlanta and the World Championships the year before. And the performances we saw in that era, but we're in a new era of wrestling. We're coming off a world championship in Paris in one of the most electrifying experiences, just even as a fan and as somebody who was there, having the opportunity to call the action. I remember when Snyder and Sadalaev took the mat last year, I looked at my Apple Watch, my heart rate was 143 beats a minute. I mean, just watching it, yeah. You got fired up. What was that experience like for you as a coach?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was, as you explained, it was a pretty electric environment. The anticipation was super high. It had been something building for several years, just the matchup of Kyle Snyder with Sadalaev. But then for the team race to be where it was and everything on the line, it's been said a bunch that, it's kind of a storybook ending and if you were to write it as a screenplay or a movie, I think it would have been rejected because it was too cliche, right?
Yeah, no way this happens. No way you've got the rush. It was like Rocky IV, but in real life.
Yeah, for sure. Just prodigy to prodigy, Team USA versus Team Russia, everything on the line, winner takes all. And, it really was that way. In the other matches too, Jordan's match earlier that night, everything's on the line. So, he kind of lived through the same situation and then Kyle put the exclamation point on it. And even just the match itself, back and forth, he scores, we score, he scores again, we score again. And then right down to the wire, Kyle scoring with 16 seconds left, to finish it out. And it was just phenomenal, super exciting, super intense moment. Winning a world title as an individual is a pretty amazing experience. And, the biggest thing you're going to do as an individual, but having an opportunity to accomplish that with several people everybody that's involved in coordinating everybody together. It's just a, it's different, but it's hard to explain the gamut of emotions that you go through and the reward that you feel, when we've done it with, you know, more than just eight people, more than just the guys that were on the team, but their personal coaches, their training partners, our administrative staff, everybody that, comes together to make something like that happen. It was pretty awesome.
So compare the experience. You won the world championship in 2006 in Guangzhou, and you had the opportunity to hear the Star Spangled Banner played as you're on the top of the podium. What does that mean as a coach? And as you said, all that support staff, all the team members, I mean, what did it mean to hear, "Oh, say, can you see," when the flag is raising up there in Paris?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, it will change your life. I love our national anthem, and I've always been patriotic and have a ton of respect for our anthem and our flag and our country. But when you stand at the top of the podium and you get to hear it played, in that sense, it changes it forever. And every time I hear the anthem, you know, last week at the NCAA tournament, we heard the anthem a couple of times, and you know, even sitting there in the stands, it still gives me chills. And I have nothing to do with it. You know, I'm watching as a fan and watching some great wrestling. But to stand up on a podium and receive the award
by yourself, no less, by yourself, you're the guy. Yeah. You're the only one on that podium with that giant trophy.
Yeah. And then looking at who's with you, the other countries, you know, Russia on my right, Georgia on my left, two of the best countries in the world, and the wrestling traditions and history that they have, in listening to our anthem played in that arena, it's just an amazing experience and a very humbling experience. That just thankful and for the opportunity and the people that you work with, and so many people that help elevate our program and do what we can do. So yeah, it's like I said, it's really hard to measure it or quantify it and describe it in words, but it's an amazing experience.
From a wrestling perspective, I guess as a coach, it's kind of hard to maybe separate yourself from and looking at it from a fan standpoint, but we saw Jordan Burroughs have arguably the worst day of his life on a wrestling mat in Rio. And then, you know, here we go a year later, just a little over a year later, 370 some odd days. It was something like that. It was close. And to see him come back, and he had said on Richard Immel's program on Bonus Points, he's going to win a world championship again. He's going to win a world championship again. What was it like to see him come from, you know, the lowest he's been as an athlete, as a professional, to getting back on the top of that ladder? And he's not invincible in terms of giving up points, but you know, just to see that grit and moxie come through.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, I mean, how do you describe that? It's United World Wrestling described it as the greatest comeback of the year, and so they gave that award in all three disciplines. You know, in women's and Greco and men's freestyle, and Jordan won it. Was given that award, and you know, we invest a lot, and our sport is super demanding in so many areas, technically, tactically, physically, the commitment you give, the discipline of your diet and weight management routine. So because of all that, the sum of all of that effort and accumulation and sacrifice that you and your training, your coaches and your families, you know, husbands and wives and sons and daughters, it's total commitment. It means an awful lot. You know, we feel as if we've risked much. And so there's much to gain and there's a lot. But we still have to remember that it is a game. And it is not life and death. And in the harder moments, we have to rely on that perspective. Like, you know, I know there were some hard times for Jordan in Leo. And but I'll tell you this, when he walked off that mat and his hand didn't get raised and he didn't win the second Olympic title that he was wanting, I don't think Beacon or Aura cared about that one bit. Or his, I mean, of course his wife probably cared because she loves her husband, but it doesn't change who the man is. And I know our coaching staff and our team and the people that are close to Jordan, it didn't change him in our eyes. But you hurt for him because he wanted to accomplish that, and we know he was capable. So then, you know, working through those things and learning and growing ourselves as individuals and as coaches and athletes, working together, it was exciting. It was encouraging to see him progress and move forward. And it really, I think, shows the depth of a champion, you know. And, you know, there's lots of great quotes about, you know, the guys who stumble in the arena or the critic and, you know, Theodore Roosevelt and others. But the true mark of a champion, you know, being not the one that gets knocked down, but who gets back up. And so to see Jordan go through that process and to be involved in it and to see him accomplish that goal again of putting himself back on top was an extremely gratifying experience.
We'll come back to certain topics about the World Championship as we weave into the World Cup discussion here. But just to give some people a backstory, you came from Montana. And in the stories you talk about growing up wrestling, you wrestled freestyle growing up before you wrestled any of the folk style stuff. Then you you chose to go to the University of Iowa. Coach Gable was at the tail end of his coaching career. But, you know, why you know, how did it end up that you were growing up wrestling freestyle as an American and then you end up going to the University of Iowa? Kind of a fill in the blanks of, I mean, realize that's a long swath of your youth years. But, you know, kind of sum that up for us.
Well, you know, in my youth, a lot of wrestling, well, you know, especially in Montana, wrestling in the Northwest, the grassroots wrestling was club wrestling that was all freestyle and Greco. So I wrestled on freestyle and Greco when I started with my local club. And my dad always taught me, you know, in the living room, stuff like that. But during my second year, my dad started coaching with our club. And then after that year, the head coach retired and my dad was asked to jump in and take over. And he did. And so that's just how we started, you know. And at that time, it was much more prevalent that the club wrestling was freestyle and Greco, international styles. And I think, you know, in the last couple of decades, things have changed in for-profit enterprises and you know, people are being successful running tournaments. And so there's more and more folk style opportunities that have kind of progressed throughout the year. So you can almost wrestle folk style year round. And I didn't really, you know, we didn't have exposure to that in Montana. So my first dabbling into folk style was in junior high a little bit, and then really as a freshman in high school. And so, but you know, at the same time growing up, Gable was in the heyday of his career, and he was reeling off national title after national title as a teen. And, you know, that combined with his reputation as an athlete, you know, there's a lot of great coaches and great minds in our country now. And back then it was kind of, there were only two shows in town, you know, it was Iowa and Oklahoma State. And that was a huge rivalry. And so, you know, he was a bigger than life legend to us. And really that's kind of what I wanted to do, is go to one of those two programs. Iowa recruited me, and I had some connections to the program through somebody, the Campbell family, who started the club in my hometown and had a great wrestling tradition and history. One of the sons went to Minnesota when Jim Zaleski was there, so we had a connection. And then Jim ended up being back in Iowa when I was being recruited, and so That was kind of the connection. And then Gable came out to Montana to recruit me and sign me. And then I guess the rest is history, as they say. But that was, you know, Gable's an icon. And coming to Iowa, it was an experience of a lifetime, and I've gained a ton from it, both as a athlete and competitor, and now as a coach. But the friendships and relationships that I built around here are their lifetime type relationships. And, you know, it's not something you could ever pay for or even know that you're going to have. But yeah, it's been pretty awesome experience.
So being a Hawkeye, being a guy that's won a national championship and being somebody that's now, as a coach, won a world championship, the opportunity to come back to Carver Hawkeye, we've had the last two Olympic trials there. Anytime there's big time wrestling in Carver at the next level beyond NCAA wrestling, you know, how does it make you feel to be a part of something like this?
Yeah, it's so exciting and it's so inspirational. You know, they've done a great job to Olympic trials. I mean, the stadium's been packed and Carver's been sold out, and coming back into the state of Iowa, the tradition that is here and the significance of the sport in within the borders of Iowa, it's very important. And, you know, even just the last day and a half since our team has arrived here in Iowa City and we're training, I've been out in the community two or three times to go to the store, pick up odds and ends, and everywhere we go, people know, hey, you guys are here for the World Cup. How's that going? We're so excited. And everybody knows. It's an elevated sense of awareness. It's significance and cultural significance in a community because of the tradition and history that was built here. And so it's really inspiring, and I'm excited to be here and get to enjoy it again. And it obviously is a place that means a lot to me. And having Coach Gable and Coach DeRoe and Coach Robinson on our staff to kind of honor that tradition and history is another inspiring piece of it. So it's going to be great. I'm really excited to be here. I'm excited to showcase the highest level of international wrestling to an excellent wrestling fan base. People who are typically used to seeing folk style wrestling, we get to really show off and put on a display of great international wrestling skills. So all those things, you know, it's just really excited and looking forward to this opportunity.
You had mentioned the coaching staff, and it was interesting. You're talking about being, you know, picking Oklahoma State or Iowa. You're recruited by Iowa. John Smith, who you're on coaching staff with throughout the course of your career at USA Wrestling, and then getting to coach with your coach. And then you bring Jay Robinson, who spent a long time at the University of Iowa before, you know, helping Minnesota win national championships in his tenure there. And then you also mentioned Mike DeRoe. And for a lot of people who don't know, right now Mike DeRoe is the head coach at Cornell College. He's battling brain cancer. But Mike DeRoe is, ever since I even got involved in international wrestling, Mike DeRoe's just been there. He is, you know, how do you describe what a guy like Mike DeRoe has meant, not just to, you know, him as being an honorary coach, but him to the U.S. freestyle system over the years? I mean, he's a guy that's kind of not really looked for the exposure. He's just been there, and he's been a constant.
Yeah, Mike has impacted so many lives, and he's just, his character and his humility speak for themselves. The fact that he maybe isn't the iconic name that's out there like others, but you know, as you said, he's been everywhere. He's been in the thick of it for decades. So, you know, wrestled at Drake College in Des Moines and has gone on to coach in high school in Illinois and in college at UPenn, and was a developmental coach at one point for USA Wrestling. And I think that was actually before he was at UPenn. And at now leading Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa. He's just, you know, for the people that are in the wrestling community, everybody knows who Mike DeRoe is. Everybody knows that his name is synonymous with character and value and concern and care and knowledge. Guy's just, he's the type of guy that will do anything for you and has done for me and several others. He's been a close friend of Coach Gable's for a long time. And that's, you know, how I was introduced to him as a young man. And so he's had an indelible impact on a lot of lives. And so, it's great to honor him and have him be a part of our team and continue that legacy. He's in the fight for his life right now, and we're all praying for him. But his passion for wrestling and for people, is keeping him going. He was in the practice room this morning and talked to him a few times over the last couple of weeks and getting prepared, and he was here watching work out this morning. And so, you know, we're all here fighting with him, and I'm super honored to have him on our bench.
With the way the World Cup is structured this year, it's, you know, we've got a new World Team Trials format. We've got 10 weight classes to fill. From a planning standpoint, where does the World Cup fit into the national team training structure and ultimately the selection of teams? And how has this really kind of changed things up from the schedule and calendar that you've been used to, even going back to prior when Zeke Jones was, you know, scheduling things out?
Yeah, it's changed things. You know, anytime there's changes like that in a structural sense, you really have to take a step back and evaluate your process and kind of measure your philosophical ideas and goals with this new strength and make sure that you're adhering to the things that you know are going to be successful while analyzing a new network. And so, our procedure, you know, on paper, our world team selection is similar in nature. However, the timing of it is different, right? We have a U.S. Open and we have a mini tournament, but the 2 out of 3 series is now delayed beyond that mini tournament. So it essentially took a 2-stage process to a 3-stage process for the individuals, the athletes. But because our trials weekends are 3 weekends, June 9, June 16, and June 23, for myself and for other administrators of the sport, it's increased it, right? It made a 3-stage process instead of lasting 6 weeks. It now is like 9 weeks for some of us. So that's presented some challenges. However, I think it's also presented some opportunities. And with the 3 events in 3 different locations and really now, like I said, a 2-stage process now has 5 events to it. It's an opportunity for us to grow and showcase more international wrestling in additional locations and have some consistency and programming and people know, hey, U.S. Open's in Las Vegas in April. We know we can see the World Trials Challenge Tournament in Rochester, Minnesota in May. And then 3 weekends in June, we can continue to watch our team develop. So hopefully that's a great opportunity to continue to grow our sport in the public view. And then, you know, the World Cup, it's a major event, right? Top 8 teams in the world. It's a really exciting format. And basically the only opportunity in international wrestling to see a dual meet style event. And so it's really a neat thing to be a part of. And then the significance of Iran having won it the last 6 years in a row and us being very close last year in Kermanshah and now being able to host it on our soil, on our turf, and in this great wrestling location in Iowa City. It's really important. It's really important. It's something that we've keyed on. And we, of course, want to win. We know there's going to be a formidable challenge. And we've planned for it, you know, ever since the announcement of the event in Iowa. You know, it's factored into our national team planning and how we peak and prepare for this and then use this as a launch pad into our trials procedure and ultimately into Budapest in October. So, yeah, You know, sometimes this international stuff, the wrestling is really exciting, but the external or the geopolitical politics adds another level of dynamics and drama to the situation. You know, last year for us getting to Iran was quite the challenge, and this year getting all the countries here to participate has presented its own challenges. So there's a lot to it. There's a lot to it.
You know, in terms of a promotional aspect, and granted, promotion is not the first thing on your job description, but you know, when you hear problems about visas from Iran, visas from Russia and some of the former Soviet republics that want to come to this country, you know, how much does it kind of weigh on you as a coach? Be like, man, we have an opportunity to really showcase wrestling. And as much as we don't mm-hmm. want politics to interject, and we're actually a sport that typically in major media gets ignored unless there's something like the World Cup last year or visas. I mean, we become national news or international news sometimes for the wrong reasons. How frustrating can that be as a coach?
It can be. But, you know, a lot of those things are out of your control or are my immediate control, right? So in our guest, you know, we have Pete Isaias and Rich Bender that works with him and Les Gotches that are working in conjunction with the State Department and these consulates from around the world to get them access and get them visas. But for me and for our athletes, I pay attention to it because it's important. I try to shelter my athletes from it and just talk to them about, you know, focus on the details, take care of yourself. Your job isn't to worry about who's on the mat in front of you. Your job is to be as prepared as you can be and relaxed and excited and ready to go compete. And, you know, it's a nameless, baseless opponent that slaps the hand in front of you. And you go out there and put on the best show you can put on. And so, you know, we try to keep them focused and not ride the roller coaster of drama. Sometimes the political underpinnings of these things are maybe some of these countries don't mind the drama, right? It's a little bit of an ambush. Are we coming? Are we not coming? And the last minute they were like, oh, no, we're not here. We're not coming. We can't get in. And then the next thing you know, they're in. And so I think they try to, a little bit, it's the mind game, you know, are they trying to ambush it or not? And, you know, my job is to prepare my athletes as best as possible. And so we stay focused on doing the job that we can do best. And I'll try to worry about the rest of it for them and have them ready when they step on the mat. So it is a little bit interesting and it is crazy at times. But that's what makes life interesting too, you know?
As we talk about, you talked about guys that, you know, you can't worry about who's going to be across the mat from you, but what we've got from the United States on who's going to be on the mat, obviously right off the get-go, Iowa City is going to have representation, Thomas Gilman, who was a world silver medalist last year. But when you look at the weight classes, and that is something that's been a change. This is the first year we fully got the 10 weight classes, and American fans have kind of been salivating over this because now you can actually put Jordan Burroughs, Kyle Dake, David Taylor, Jaden Cox, Kyle Snyder, Nick Gwizdowski, hypothetically, all in the same line. You can do it here for the World Cup. That may not be what the world team is because of the process, but you've got an opportunity to put all of our stars on one team versus, you know, Jordan Burroughs, Kyle Dake, and David Taylor trying out for one spot. You know, the 10 weight classes has got to, you know, it makes, you know, the U.S. on paper maybe a better team, but, you know, there's other countries that also have depth. In terms of the depth of weight class, what does this mean? I mean, we've got our star power seems to be spread out, but, you know, who's going to challenge that now? Who's going to be the guy that's going to push all these stars to push them better? Because that's what made Burroughs better, was having to make sure that he could fight off Dake and Taylor for that spot for years.
Yeah, that depth is important, and it keeps people sharp. But, you know, we have a great team. And you know, along with the guys that you've mentioned from top to bottom, our additional athletes we're allowed to bring two athletes per weight class. So we have two athletes at each weight. And, you know, I would submit the NCAA tournament as my evidence if this were a court case. I mean, look at the talent, look at the exciting wrestling, look at the skill level. You know, I think it was announced in Cleveland, you had two true freshmen NCAA champions, the first time since like 1964.
47, actually. The only other time it happened was 1947, post-World War II, when those freshmen were eligible for that 1 year. It's the only time multiple true freshmen.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a testament to what's being done on the developmental level.
Heavy now, freestyle guys, too. Know, those two kids are world champions.
Yeah, yeah. Both of them, you know, are cadet and junior world champions. So, and then up and down that lineup, if you look at the finals, every weight class that was represented in the finals had somebody who had been on a cadet or junior world team in the past, except for one. And the number one ranked athlete at that weight, at 197 pounds. So, you know, Colin Moore has been junior world bronze medal. So you see development happening and that's really where our depth is coming from. You know, we have some star power in our alternates, our backups, with some young guys too. And it's really exciting to see that, you know, with, names like Joey McKenna and Bo Nickel and others. So, you know, it's going to be exciting with you talk about the new weight classes, 79 and 92, was 79 kilo, man, it may have become one of our deepest weights when you look at, you know, Kyle Dake, Alex Derringer, who's three-time NCAA champion, junior world silver medalist, just won a really high-level tournament in Ukraine, Outstanding Wrestlers and Coaches Memorial. It was a super deep weight, and he really went through the field. And then, you know, you have John Reeder, who wrestled an excellent Dave Schultz last fall, and then throw Zahid Valencia and Mark Hall in there. I mean, that's wow. Like that's going to be a really exciting weight for fans to watch. I'm super excited to watch that and see, you know, with depth like that, we feel really good about the team that we're going to have. No matter who comes through, you know, they're going to be battle tested. You know, they're going to be ready to go. And so that speaks well for our future.
I want to go back to the coaching aspect of it, because what's happened over the years is the rise of the regional training centers and USA Wrestling's willingness to accept athletes, basically training on their own where they're comfortable. We've seen that really kind of help the medal counts and kind of bring us back to greatness as a country wrestling wise. But from your role now, how much of this is hands-on? Because, I mean, there's not much you're going to teach Jordan Burroughs about a double leg. Matter of fact, it's probably vice versa. He can probably teach you a thing or two about a double. But when you look at, okay, hey, Mark Manning, here's what we need to work with Jordan Burroughs and James Green on, and going down the line, hey, Kale, here's what we need from the guys at Nittany Lions. So how does that relationship work with those regional training center coaches, with those club coaches, and how it works into the national team model?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, as I said before, we have so many great minds in our country, right? We have all these great wrestling minds. You've mentioned several. The regional training center model, there's two key pieces that have made major impacts for us. The one piece is in the old sports club model, you could only train at a given sports club, or, you know, if the club was on an institutional property, you had to be an alum of that institution. And the other piece was developmental access. A local sports club allowed athletes from 50-mile radius, and that's been expanded to 250 miles. So the RTC model allows Olympic hopefuls to train in a regional training center. It has to be in international styles of wrestling. And so it gives those athletes, those Olympic hopefuls, an opportunity to have training partners and quality coaching. And on the developmental side, it allows our top talented young guys access to next level information so they can learn training methodology and what being a professional athlete's all about. You know, quote unquote professional, not meaning the money, but just the nature of the task in front of us dictates you have to have a certain level of commitment. And so what it's really helped us do, instead of being an either or proposition, like you're going to train at a collegiate program, which is an asset to the young guys in that program, and it's going to help elevate them, or you're going to be part of the national program, it's allowed through the USOC and the NCAA Sport Liaison Committee, it has allowed us to parallel our goals. Our college coaches, their job is to win NCAA titles and produce the best wrestlers that they can produce for their squad. My job is to produce the best team that Team USA can field. And so it's mated those goals together instead of having us compete against each other. And so it's just, you've seen, last year, our performance in Paris and winning the world championship is a testament to 9 years of that development and growth. And some of these young guys that are, we're seeing a lot more freshmen in the finals and more guys winning titles. And that's a testament to the development that those RTCs have produced at the grassroots level. So it's really powerful. It's really important. I know that in the NCAA and within the USOC, other sports are really looking at it like, we need to duplicate this model. We need to expand this into other sports because it is all of metal production on the Olympic level. And so that's really, what my job is too. I'm not teaching people how to wrestle at my level, like you said, I'm not teaching Jordan Burroughs how to do the double legs, but we're refining those things. And I have there's a margin for me, and I work within that margin to refine and improve and make adjustments to really good athletes and help them get over the hump to the next step of where they want to be.
When you look at your career as an athlete, we talked about your world championship in 2006. Of course, your brother Mike was a silver medalist that year as well, but you didn't have the opportunity. Well, you had the opportunity, but you didn't make the Olympic team. And how much does that really drive you in terms of trying to, get wrestlers to that next level? You didn't have that opportunity to wrestle in the Olympics, but you've had the opportunity now to coach athletes that have. I mean, how does that shortcoming in your athletic career drive you as a coach?
I guess I don't think about it too much. Other than I've tried to analyze why, and maybe some things clicked for me. And I got some things figured out a little bit later in my career than most. And when I finally did break through and win the Worlds, one of the things that I learned is, I was really good enough to, I could have won this much sooner. And then just, a little bit, my body was, I was struggling with keeping healthy in the coming years after that. But, what happened. And I try to move forward and coach each individual as an individual, right? I don't try to coach as, you're going to do this because that's what my coach told me to do. But really analyze and look at what's in front of us. Look at an individual's gifts, his strengths, their liabilities, and work with what's there with the experience that I've had and accumulated, right? I've always tried to, as an individual, one of the greatest things, characteristics that my dad developed in Mike and I was just to learn, to be willing to learn from anybody. And that comes with a big dose of humility to walk into a wrestling room. And I do this today. Anytime I walk into a room, I assume that everybody in that room, every individual in that room has one thing that they probably do at a higher level than what I do that thing. And I want to know what that is, whether it's a philosophy or a training method or a technical position. And so I want to continue to learn and add to myself and amass this collection of information as a knowledge base and an opportunity to help others. And so that's kind of how I move forward. I still look at 66 kilo or 65 kilo now and think, I think I could compete with those guys if I were fit, but the time passes you by. We have that's an important lesson right there is we have a limited amount of time to do what we want to do with what we have. And so can't look in the rearview mirror. You can't dwell on the past. I need to devote as much of my energy as possible to looking forward to find solutions for the goals that I have set for myself and other athletes and coaches have set for themselves. And so, I'm thankful for every opportunity that I have to do what I do and don't look in the rearview mirror too much.
You just said you want to learn something from everybody. I guess this gives me the opportunity to lean into kind of a lighter part of the conversation. What have you learned in your career from people like, Royce Alger?
I've learned a lot from Royce Alger. And some of the good lessons that I learned from Royce are how to do certain things. And a lot of them were what not to do. But, no, I'm kidding a little bit. Royce has been a great mentor. And when I came into the Iowa program, I mean, a larger than life personality and character, maybe one of the toughest, most humanly raw people that I've ever met. And of course, super colorful, right? Super funny, loves telling stories and is a great entertainer. And so I've learned a lot of things from Royce. And, he is a very tough human being. And so, yeah, I've learned a lot from him. One of the things that I learned was how to properly execute rock, paper, scissors. When I was a true freshman, I went to school and sometime in that first semester, I hear, hey, you're going to be at the rock, paper, scissors tournament. I'm like, what? And Royce is throwing a rock, paper, scissors tournament. And so we meet at a local establishment and out back, there's an outdoor patio. And I go out there and there's a 1 meter circle duct taped on the ground. So silver duct tape with a line right through the middle. And I show up a little bit late and somebody calls Royce Alger on deck with Greg Randall and they jump in the circle and Royce is wearing bib overalls, a big pair of like muck farm boots. And he's wearing an old mountain man's fur hat, out of like a raccoon hide with a tail hanging off the back. He jumps in this circle and him and Randall go rock, paper, scissors, best two out of three. And it was like, I was a pretty naive kid from Montana and it was hilarious. It was a great experience. They had a bracket written on the back of one of Royce's NCAA championship brackets. And on the back, they had like a Sharpie and they drew out the bracket and everybody's name was in the bracket and the winner took the bracket home. And I believe Royce won his own bracket, thankfully. But, one of many stories like that about,
As a side note, and this is another rock, paper, scissors story. I feel like I have to interject this because in 2013, Mr. Alger, who was a, multiple time Big Ten champion, I believe three times, right? And he again challenged, he was in a discussion in the lobby with some of the training partners. Kellen Russell was there and he starts this kind of, how many Big Ten titles you win? And Kellen Russell nonchalantly goes four. And so Royce challenges him, rock, paper, scissors, his three Big Ten titles against Kellen Russell's four Big Ten titles. Guess what? Royce didn't take home the bracket that day. So now, forever known, Kellen Russell is a seven-time Big Ten champion because he has all three of Alger's. And he probably, if we'd have thought better of it, we should have had him, put a bracket on there as well.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Kellen. That's awesome. I don't know that I've ever seen Royce lose in rock paper.
I saw, the thing is, moments after that, he did not give up the turn against Jimmy Kennedy. That story's actually making the rounds too, about what
I heard that one recently.
I think that came up on FRL, but the thing is, actually have photographic evidence of Royce's moment of victory and his moment of shame. So those were over a suds or two, so they remain private property off the record. But a lot of stuff about Royce needs to stay off the record. But
The off the record stories sometimes are the better ones.
Those are for me and you to discuss. So I don't know, not on a show. Now as we move forward and wrap things up here. We touched on your brother's career a bit, and is it kind of interesting? You know, so many people are kind of taken back the fact that the entire Iowa State coaching staff is former Hawkeyes. You know, what's your take on your brother wearing Iowa State colors now as a career choice?
Yeah, life's interesting twists and turns, right? I mean, who would have thought, Gable, the greatest college wrestler ever, would have, left the Cyclones to become an Iowa Hawkeye? And Cale Sanderson going to Penn State. So it is some change. But, as I said, change is always good. And the one thing that's consistent in life is change. And so, some of it's just the nature of the sports world and sports industry is there's a limited number of jobs and people go to the opportunities that present themselves. And so it is different. I know, Mike loved his opportunity in Virginia and loved the people there. And I know he's really excited to be back in the state of Iowa because of the significance we talked about earlier. Wrestling is really important to people here. And, we as a family have a lot of relationships and history and friends and extended family that live here. And so he's really enjoying that opportunity to be back in this environment and have an opportunity to build something good at a history program. Iowa State is one of our storied programs. One of, I think there's only 11 Division I programs who have ever won the NCAA title. And so they have an opportunity to build on that tradition and that history. And so he's really excited. As you mentioned, there's a bunch of quality guys that he gets to work with there with Coach Dresser and Metcalf in St. John. And so, he's excited. They certainly have their work cut out for them and they're building, but, we all are competitive. That's part of human nature. So everyone wants to, be successful at what you do, but the most rewarding parts of that are developing the relationships with the people that you work with and that are around, the athletes and administrators and so, it's a great opportunity to be back here where wrestling means a lot to people.
All right. Finally, as we wrap up, we've got Gable's Garden, which will be out there at the World Cup as we circle back to the World Cup, 7th and 8th of April. WorldCupIowaCity.com, still opportunity to get your tickets at one of the most iconic wrestling facilities, not just in the country, but in the world, Carver Hawkeye Arena. That is a Saturday-Sunday event. A lot of good things that are going to happen there. If you're an American fan, you're going to have the opportunity to see a lot of great international wrestling really quickly. You'll be able to chant USA and you're going to have to contend with other fans singing and dancing along, something that may be foreign to maybe the fans who typically visit Carver Hawkeye Arena for sporting events. But I want to talk about Dan Gable and his, obviously Gable's Garden, the statue. He is the icon of Iowa wrestling and one of the icons of this sport. As you were talking about earlier, what are some tips and things that you've picked up from Gable over the years that you remember learning as an athlete and now as you're older now, being a leader of men in this position that maybe you've asked him over the years, is like, hey, that are certain Gable-isms that have made their way into Bill Zadig's coaching acumen?
Yeah, man, what an invaluable experience. You couldn't even begin to talk about that and quantify it, but one of the things that Gable instilled was independence in all of his athletes. And when I talk about teaching young athletes and with our junior resident program and what was been able to do with, and launch Kyle Snyder's career on a successful path. I mean, he was successful before, but, the idea was we elevated that. And with our juniors now and our seniors, it's, the independence that Gable talked about is what I refer to as being a professional. You have a task laid out in front of you. It's a difficult task. And because of that, it dictates that we must exercise certain abilities, commitment, work ethic, discipline, sacrifice, prioritization. And so that was something that, you know, my father was my coach, and it was a very healthy, nurturing, positive environment. But a little bit, I was probably not as independent when I came into college. You know, I needed that, right? I always had my dad or I had someone else there to say, hey, it's time to, let's do this, let's do that. And I loved it. But when I got here, that was something that Coach Gable really helped instill in me. And so that's a very important aspect that I try to impart and pass that on. You know, talked about the accumulation of knowledge, and that's something that, you know, he had given to me that I hope to instill in others. So they don't need me. They don't need whoever the coach is. You know, the greatest coaches in the world, a lot of the emotional support that a great coach gives you, because of their knowledge and because of their information. But we also want these athletes to step on the mat and not have anybody there, but they still know what to do. They know what to do when they walk out of the training room at night and they're making decisions as they go home. They know what to do when the coach isn't there and it's time to get up and go do that extra workout, or it's time to pass on the chocolate chip cookie and have a spoonful of cottage cheese because that's what is going to give me more energy and fuel me better for the workout. Those types of things in all areas of our sport. So that was pretty powerful experience. And Gable, it's a whole nother show, but his intensity, the reputation for his intensity has preceded him for years and years. And I think it was somewhat misunderstood because people would say intensity. And but Gable, he is that icon, and he had that aura about him that everybody wanted to impress him always. And so, I had a unique window of experience, for 13 years of my life living there that, I've drawn little bits every day, and sometimes you discover new things that I witnessed or learned or got from Coach Gable that they come up in my coaching career now. And I'm like, you know what? This reminds me of a situation. It's maybe not exactly the same, but similar. And so it's just been a pretty, pretty amazing experience to draw from.
Bill Zadek, National Freestyle Coach of USA Wrestling, set for the World Cup, April 7th and 8th, 2018, Carver Hawkeye Arena, WorldCupIowaCity.com. A lot of insight, a lot of knowledge, a lot of history there. And, good luck next weekend. We will actually see you down there. I'll be down there on Friday. So looking forward to seeing Team USA compete in Carver Hawkeye.
Thanks, Jason. We will be excited. Looking forward to seeing everybody. Again, it's going to be a great event. Top 8 teams in the world. And so we're excited and ready to go.
Subscribe to the World Wrestling Resource Podcast by going to WWRpodcast.com and check it out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spreaker, or wherever you find your podcasts. World Wrestling Resource at WorldWrestlingResource.com.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.